You're listening to A Senior Moment, the show for and about seniors. I'm Joanne Rideout. I'm here in the studio with my co-hosts for the show, Michelle Lewis from Northwest Senior and Disability Services and Doug Schaefer from the Olympic Area Agency on Aging. Hi, Michelle. Hi, Doug.
Hi, morning. Joanne.
Thanks for being here today. Every month we get together on A Senior Moment and talk about some sort of an issue related to seniors. Today we're talking about family caregiver support. And that's a term that you hear in this field, but I thought it would be good to explain what we're talking about. Michelle, how about you? What does that mean, family caregiver? What does that term mean?
So it's a growing role in our society now that people who are caring for a family member, or it could be a friend or a neighbor, honestly, underneath that definition, an unpaid caregiver for somebody else who needs some help with anything from housekeeping to grocery shopping, help with bathing, dressing. Those people are really important to our economy and to our society now, and it's a growing need as our aging population continues. So, basically, if you're caring for anybody, you're an unpaid caregiver for anybody, you're a family caregiver.
Wow. So there's, you know, as we talked about before the show, there are a lot of older people who are caring for other older people in this kind of demographic.
Right. And it's just something we do for each other. We don't really think about us as, you know, when you're doing that role, that you are a caregiver.
Yeah.
I think sometimes we think that's a professional role that people get paid for. But honestly, identifying yourself as a caregiver, then you start accessing the services and the supports and things that are available to you. So at least making that connection that this is a great thing I'm doing for mom or dad or husband or wife or whoever. But understanding also that it comes with a package of resources and some stress-related things that you need to understand and some supportive services that might be available.
Well, let's start talking about those services. Why don't we talk about Oregon first? What, as Northwest Senior and Disability Services, what do you provide in this realm for people?
So for unpaid family caregivers, we have the Family Caregiver Support Program. That program offers $400 a respite per year, fiscal year, that will allow a person to take some time off and then get reimbursed for paying for somebody to help your person you're caring for. It's a pretty easy program. It's basically, it's not contingent on income or resources. Simple to sign up for. You just basically come talk to me or I come out and visit you in your home. And the person that you're caring for needs to have a little bit of assistance need in things like bathing or dressing or walking, toileting, that kind of thing. But it's a pretty lenient program. We want the caregiver to take care of themselves. We want them to use this program. So it's not very many barriers in the way. It also can help persons purchase some supplies and some safety equipment, so things like grab bars and walkers. And if it's not covered by Medicare, it's something that probably can be covered through the Family Caregiver Program. In addition, we have a Grandparents Caring for Grandchildren's program through that same funding source that allows grandparents who are full-time caregivers for minor children or children who are adults with disabilities to access respite and supplemental services through that program. Mm,
okay. So, Doug, in Washington, what's the program like there?
Well, the Family Caregiver Support Program in Washington is pretty comprehensive. What it does is there's an assessment that is done, and it's all, remember, we're all looking at the unpaid family caregiver. So it's not that the care receiver isn't important.
Sure.
But the idea is if we support the family caregiver, then that whole situation will stay stable longer. The person might be able to remain home longer, and the caregiver can continue to provide the care they want to care. But it starts off in our situation. There's a different types of support that we do in the program, but for the main part of the family caregiver support, there's a screening that's done with the caregiver, and it measures things like self-identifying, any stress that you're having, depression, burnout. Has your relationship changed with your family member? Do you feel more like you're a nurse than a spouse? You know, all these type of things that people may think about, but until you're actually talking to them about them, they don't realize that, yeah, that does happen. And so there's a screening, and depending upon where they come out on that screening and how they score, then there's a cafeteria of services we can provide. We can provide respite, which is, you know, someone coming into the home to relieve the caregiver. We also pay for counseling for stress reduction and depression for the caregiver. We've paid for gym memberships and pool dues so they can exercise and get out and keep themselves healthy that way. Then there's the support groups and all those various different things. And it's really geared to keep that family caregiver healthy for as long as possible. And what we found out statewide is the last survey they did, they said it was over 84%. It was like 84 to 85% had marked decreases in depression and in stress and all of that. So,
wow.
Yeah, and it's really pervasive. Like she mentioned, in Washington State anyway, 80% of all caregiving is done by unpaid family caregivers, or family caregivers or unpaid caregivers.
Yeah.
And so it's huge. And in Washington State, they've thrown a lot of money into it. When they've cut back on Medicaid, they've continually increased the funding on family caregiver. You know, you would like to say it's out of their compassion and kindness of their heart, but it saves a lot of money because they're not tapping into federal Medicaid dollars. So that's really one part of it. That takes an assessment, and we have our coordinators that come out and do that assessment and then work with you and decide which services you want, which would fit with you, and then authorize those services and continue to follow up. Another part of the family caregiver support program we do is called Relatives as Parents. It's kind of like the grandparents raising grandchildren, but it could be any family member that's raising another family member's children, and the parents aren't in the home. They're out of the picture. So, yeah, we've had people raising nieces, nephews, grandchildren, all of that kind of stuff. And that's called a kinship care program. We call it internally Relatives as Parents. And it's a once-a-year help. And usually it's about August. They say, well, you know, school's starting, and there's all these fees and all these supplies. And so once a year we can help with up to about $750 to go shopping, just to get ready for whatever you need it to be. And so we run into that. Demographics there have changed quite a bit. We had a client who was in his 80s taking care of his great-grandson.
Wow.
So you run into these things, and you can imagine the cultural gap.
Yeah.
Between, you know, when great-grandpa was in school and when this kid's in school.
Yeah.
We get in and, you know, we do support groups for them also and work with them. Try to figure out what the best thing we can do to make that work for them. So there's two different, like I said, two different aspects to it. The sort of unpaid family caregiver that you usually think of as spouses or kids in the home taking care of mom or dad, and then the Relatives as Parents program.
So, Michelle, let me throw this back to you for a minute. At one time, Northwest Senior and Disability Services sponsored a class for caregivers. Is that happening from time to time anymore?
We do. We still have some classes. We just finished up a Savvy Caregiver series, and that was really aimed at people who are caring for somebody with dementia or Alzheimer's disease. That is a great program as far as getting good, solid information about the disease process and how the brain's functioning at different phases, and give you some skills to work around behavior issues. We do that kind of thing. We also have long-term care options classes that happen periodically. We'll be ramping those up probably starting in July and doing a library series coming up pretty soon of options, long-term care options. So look for those.
Okay.
We also have the support groups. So we have a Alzheimer's support group and a regular caregiver support group in our office every month.
So do you have, maybe I'll start with you, Michelle, how many people are in the support group? Do you have any idea?
It varies. Sometimes one or two will show up, and sometimes eight or ten, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, it just depends on how things are going with the people that are in the group.
So how about you, Doug, in Washington? You have support groups. How many people show up generally?
It's the same as Michelle was saying. It's sometimes you'll be there and it'll be just a whole lot of people. But then, you know, life interrupts and they have other things they need to do.
Right, they're caregiving.
Yeah, right. So, and then sometimes you have a lot. And we too have both the Alzheimer's support groups over there plus the family caregiver support groups. And I think it's important for people to realize if they're listening to this, if you are taking care of someone, you, no matter how you identify yourself, you know, you are a caregiver because you're providing care, but you're not alone out there. You don't have to do it all yourself. And a lot of times in the support groups, one of the dynamics that I always enjoyed was when someone's talking about, well, I've been taking care of my husband for the last 10 years. Someone else comes in and goes, well, I've just started doing that. And so they start talking and they're saying, well, I get so frustrated. Well, try this. Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, you know, so they share ideas.
Yeah, they share ideas. And it also helps with their identification. Okay, there are other people here who really don't think of themselves as caregivers, but we are, and we're getting support. So I think that's a real key factor in helping people navigate these waters.
Well, I think, you know, as somebody myself who's in the role of a caregiver with my dad, who's old, who's 96, is that it's hard to sort of realize that you need support because you're just so busy doing it and you don't really quite realize the effect that might be having on you. So when you, Doug, when you do the screenings, that must be kind of an eye-opening thing for people sometimes.
It is, and it can get very emotional.
Yeah.
And so we do it in a variety of ways. We will contact them and go out and sit down with them. And if they start answering the questions and it's like, well, then we can leave a paper form with them. And then when they can kind of work their way through it and then get it back to us. Or we, some people say, well, let's just do it over the phone. So that initial screening is pretty open. But a lot of times it is very much, because there are areas you don't think about. You're, like you said, you're so busy doing the caregiving, you don't think about how this is impacting me. How do I feel about this family member now? I mean, do I still feel like this is dad? And especially when dementia and Alzheimer's, you know, the dad I knew isn't this guy.
Yeah.
You know? So there's that kind of thing too. But it does become very emotional. It's a real eye opener. But once they realize that maybe I do need help and there is help available, then that really turns the tide.
Well, I think it's interesting, you know, and I've certainly read about this before, but the whole idea of sort of parenting your parent.
Reparenting.
It's a really interesting thing. So why don't we talk a little bit about some of those emotional issues? So, Michelle, let me start with you. Let's just explore that a little bit more. So what are the issues that people bring to this when they come into a support group? What are people talking about?
Well, one of the main things is the role reversal that you're talking about. That certainly is difficult on families. And sometimes just naming the fact that, oh, yeah, okay, so I am acting more like a parent. It's not just I'm being disrespectful to my parent when I'm issuing this decree or this order. actually I'm taking more parental role and that's okay because right now that's what that person needs. And so you're fulfilling the need. But then some communication skills help with that. So how do you really frame that so that it's more acceptable to you and to your parent? A lot of times there's a lot of anger because their life has been interrupted, changed. Maybe they had retirement plans and now they've changed totally. Or maybe they're working in the middle of their career and they're, you know, thinking about advancing. And here I've got mom and dad to take care of, plus my kids. And so that can kind of put a binder on that. So there's a lot of reasons why anger could be surfacing. They can get between marriages. Older kids could, where you really thought, you know, the teenage kids would be bringing home their friends and you'd be part of their life. All of a sudden, grandpa or grandma's there and they're not acting appropriately for the teenage kids. And so now that's an issue. Exhaustion. That's that's a big one. I mean, they're so tired, they don't even know they're tired anymore. They don't even know what's going on. Chronic diseases, chronic issues like chronic pain and migraine headaches, those things that just get bigger when you're under that kind of stress. So they tend also not taking care of themselves. Mm-hmm. So it's easier to think about giving your parents their pills or the person you're caring for their pills. And remember, you take care of your own, apparently.
Often
once, you know, you just forget that you need to do those things for yourself. Time you get all the doctor's appointments done for the person you're caring for, there's no time for your appointment. You forgot to make that appointment and you forgot to get your prescription drugs filled. You forgot to, you know, get your exercise in for the day. So those kind of things are pretty pervasive almost in all caregiving situations.
So Doug, what do you think? Are you seeing the same sort of issues on the Washington side of the river?
Oh, absolutely.
That Michelle's talking about?
And I think I would add to that stack guilt. Feeling you start getting, because you're exhausted, probably a little depression, all of that, and you're trying to get mom or dad to do things, and you've taken that role. And sometimes mom or dad are reminding you that you're not my parent, I'm your parent.
Yes.
So you dance in that dance.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you get frustrated and tired and burn out, and you're thinking, I don't know if I can keep doing this. Well, then the guilt comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but it's my mom. But it's my dad.
Yeah.
I can't just, you know, put them someplace. I love them begrudgingly sometimes, but I still love them, you know.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
And then you feel guilty that you feel like that.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that the care receiver, mom or dad or whoever, is feeling guilty that they've put this burden, so-called, upon their kids. You know, that I've seen it and heard it personally in our own lives before, that, you know, I wish, you know, you guys didn't have to do this for me. Well, it is what it is. But then you feel guilty because they feel guilty. And then it just sort of goes around and around.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I mean, all the things that I hear you talking about, I've felt every one of them at one time or another in that caregiver role myself. But do you find that people, I mean, because I sort of have a tendency to go, I'm okay, just keep going, you know, yeah, whatever, sure, other people need help, not me. So do you encounter people with that attitude?
Oh, yeah, all the time. I'm okay until they hit the wall.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
And it's. I think that's human nature for a lot of us.
You know,
it's like, well, there are a lot of people who are worse off than me in worse situations, right? So we sort of justify and rationalize it that way, forgetting that there's also a lot of people who are in a better spot than we are, you know?
That's true.
It is. And that's the whole problem with family caregiver support, as I'm sure Michelle can say too, is that they're just doing. I'm okay. They need my help until there's no reserves left, no energy, no.
Well, so do people, how do people get in contact with your, so somebody's sitting there like me who thinks help is for other people, not me. So how do people end up approaching, maybe Michelle, how do they end up approaching your group to get in, to your organization to get into a group? Is it some crisis that propels people to get involved in getting the help that they need?
Kind of that first time quite often it is. It has reached a point a few times where Adult Protective Services has gotten involved and made the referral, and that's unfortunate when it gets to that point because nobody wants to go there.
Mm-hmm, sure.
But quite often, the person has just reached the bitter end and a friend said something about a program that maybe they want to look into. And so then they make a contact to our office and we would get them hooked up to the right person. But, yeah, I think quite often it reaches a crisis point, or at least somebody's perceived a crisis point. A friend has or another family member has. January is a good time around our office that we will see a lot of families coming forward because they've all just gotten together for the holidays, and they say, oh, gosh, mom's not doing well. Or maybe they don't like the way sister was taking care of mom, and now they've got a little complaint that they want to talk about. But all those things start coming to a head because the families have gotten together and things have changed.
Yeah,
and so
sure.
They recognize a change and they're looking for some help, and that's usually when they'll contact us.
Well, I went through one of the classes at Northwest Senior and Disability Services a number of years ago that was a caregiver support class, and one of the things that I was really, it was pretty stunning, there was that little film that they showed in which the husband was taking care of the wife and she was, or it was the wife taking care of the husband and he was ill, had dementia, and she died before him because of the stress of the caregiving. That was really stunning.
Yeah, it was a doll maker.
Yeah. Boy, that was really a real wake-up call. But I know that I had the feeling being in the support group that I went to a few times that it was that feeling of like, oh my God, people have things so much worse than I do. How can I even complain?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Well, the scenario you're talking about where the caregiver dies before the person they're caring for, that's not unusual.
No.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that isn't. So I do try to remind caregivers who are in that kind of situation, you know, what would happen if you got sick or you passed away, how would that look for the person you're caring for? And sometimes that'll, you know, turn on the light and say, well, yeah, I do have to take care of myself because I'm, you know,
yeah,
to help
I'm taking
my person
care.
I'm caring for.
Right.
I need to take care of myself first. And for some reason, we just don't do that as family caregivers. We don't take care of ourselves. We've got to. And that needs to be just like you would if you're a parent, you know, you have to take care of yourself for the sake of your children. This is kind of the same thing for the person you're caring for. You need to take care of yourself for their benefit. If you won't do it for yourself, do it for them.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, and also the idea of kind of looking at yourself the way you would if you were your own friend.
Yes, exactly.
You know, like if I saw me going through this, it was not me, what would I say to that person?
Well, it's like Michelle was saying when you ask about how people contact us or why they contact us. A lot of it is family. You know, they're, well, and way too often it is another family member goes, well, I don't think she's taking very good care of, you know. Well, why don't you come down and help? Well, I can't do that, you know.
But, I just want to complain.
Yeah, exactly. But a lot of times it is a family member that just notices the differences. Or they notice not maybe even the care receiver, the person that's getting the help, but they notice that the family member that's taking care of them doesn't look too good. They look exhausted. They look burnt out and all of that. And then, of course, we heavily rely on KMUN, you know, to get referrals to us.
Oh, well, thank you. We'll do our best. Well, you know, one of the things that I am always watching for as a caregiver is signs of dementia, because that brings things to a whole nother level of care and worry and stress, and everything just goes up the charts if you start thinking that your family member is going through that. So, Michelle, can we just talk a little bit about the difference when someone has dementia in the caregiving role, you know?
Yeah, that's actually, that's probably the most stressful kind of caregiving that you can do, is caregiving for somebody that you care, that you love, that has dementia. And quite often it's sneaking up on you. You don't really know. You don't call it dementia either. You don't realize that this is actually an Alzheimer's type of situation, or there's many reasons for dementia to happen for a person. But so they're kind of evolving into this new caregiving role and having to give more and more mental support, memory support all the way through. And they're taking less and less care of themselves, and they're going through kind of a grieving process the entire time, because this person that they're caring for is changing, and they're losing the person. Where if you're taking care of somebody maybe has cancer, it really hurts. It's hard to go through it. It's hard to watch it, but you have the person usually there with you.
Yeah.
With the person with dementia, you're losing that person. You're losing that relationship that you had. And so the caregiving stress and the loss are compounding each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been said that even after you've cared for somebody with dementia, you're all through it, it takes up to 3 years for your body to actually recover from that. Your immune system is going to be still in high gear over that one.
Wow.
So it takes more support. And I think those people that are caring for people with memory loss or dementia, they're even less likely sometimes to reach out for help because of all the compounding problems are happening, and because of the intense requirement for them to be there more often and watch a situation. Really, education is probably the key in that situation, understanding what that cognitive decline looks like, what that mental decline looks like, helping to make some plans. It's hard to make plans with that because you don't know, unless you understand the reason for the dementia happening, you don't really know what projection it might take. Whether it's going to, you know, might take an average of 8 years, or it might take an average of 2 years, or an average of 12 years, 20 years, you don't know. You can't plan. And so understanding that you can't plan can actually create another plan.
Yes,
so,
that's true.
So you need to work on that. How do I react to this? How do I plan for this as it changes? And what are my cues when it does change? So
So
education can go a long ways with that one.
Well, Doug, any thoughts on the whole dementia angle?
Well, I think one of the things that comes to mind when people start talking about what if my family member, you know, starts losing their memory or whatever, and we always want to make sure that they, like Michelle said, we find out the cause. I mean, it might be a dementia that's temporary. It might be something that's from the meds haven't been checked for the last 30 years because the doctor keeps going up. Yeah, well, renew that one. So, you know, get the meds reviewed. Sometimes a UTI will just really severely make someone disoriented.
That's very true. I've experienced that.
So, you know, check those things out. And if it looks like, because Alzheimer's is still a real kind of tricky diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no definitive way to do it and keep while you're still alive to define
it.
But as it's progressing and the doctors are looking at it and talking about it, then you can start to do some planning there too. And that the Alzheimer website is just phenomenal with not only research but, you know, tips from people who are going through it, how to deal with it. And again, that really does, as Michelle mentioned, compound all those dynamics we talked about, the depression, the guilt, and all the anger, mm-hmm. and all of that. Because mm-hmm. there's something in us, too. If it's mom or dad, and they're slipping away, and we're always trying to reorient them, even mm-hmm. though that's not going to happen. But there's that denial that happens, too. You know, you don't want to admit that that person that raised you is fading away someplace.
Boy, that's for sure.
So that's very difficult too.
And that's sort of, you know, sort of the dance between trying to preserve their dignity and help them and give them the care they need, but realize when they may need more care than they want.
Yes.
You know, one scenario that I've seen more than once since I've been doing this is the husband or wife taking care of their spouse. So they all along the years, you know, dementia has been kind of setting in, memory loss has been happening, and the spouse has been taking care of that person and kind of just filling in the gaps as they go. And they fill in more and more gaps as they go. But no one really talks about it because they're just doing it. The family doesn't even realize what kind of situation they're in because that spouse is always compensating for that person.
Yes.
And so when the family comes to visit for their hour or two or have dinner or go out, everything's fine because that person's compensating. That person who's caring for the person with dementia, though, they could get sick very easily and end up in a nursing home or pass away. Now you've got this person who all of a sudden it's a crisis. The family realizes this person has dementia because they can't take care of themselves.
Right.
And that happens.
Yes.
That happens quite often, actually.
Wow, that's interesting.
So, yeah. So, actually, it's so important. I think probably naming what's going on is so important.
Yes, right.
You know, standing up to name it. Okay, mom has a memory problem. Dad, I know you're doing fine with it, but let's call it what it is. You know, she has some memory problems, so we can be ready to care for her if you can't. You know, so start talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Start.
Wow. Oh, she's always been forgetful.
There's
all these things that come out to sort of protect
like
each other.
Yeah, it can seem like that because it creeps up slowly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so until a crisis happens, you don't realize it sometimes. But being up front and talking about it, and we've talked about so many other diseases and brought it up front, but dementia is something that we still don't talk about a whole lot.
People think, well, they should, you know, go to mental health services. Well, it's not really it's not a psychosis.
Yeah.
It's not a mental health diagnosis. It's not anything that behavioral health places will deal with because they can't, you're not going to be able to talk to someone and get them turned around.
Right.
So it sort of removes itself and it doesn't seem like it's a physical problem because they're still able to get around. And so it's sort of out there on the fringes and people really don't know what to do with it.
Yeah. The best term I've heard for that really is brain failure. It's just like, you know, like heart failure, kidney failure. It's brain failure.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Right.
It's another organ in the body that's failing.
Absolutely.
So that's certainly something we should be talking about. What happens when the brain fails?
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, when I use that word normal, you know, from my perspective in that caregiver role is I'm always sort of trying to make sure everything's okay, whatever the heck that means. You know, is it normal? Is whatever normal means, which there is no normal, we know. But, you know, I'm always sort of trying to make sure everything's all right, whatever that means. You know, and it gets
and that's
more
a moving
and more,
target.
Yes, and it gets trickier and trickier as time progresses in this. So, well, I think we are sort of running out of time. So maybe, Michelle, can you give us contact info for people in Oregon who need to contact you?
Yeah, so in Oregon, it would be best just to contact our office directly at Northwest Senior and Disability Services, and that's 503-861-4200. Or the website is www.nwsds.org.
Okay, and Doug, in Washington?
In Washington, in Long Beach, our number is 360-642-3634. Our Raymond office in North County is 360-942-2177. Our website is www.o3a.org. And I'd put in a plug that if you've been listening to all this and interested in it, we're looking for a family caregiver support coordinator, full-time position with our agency. And it's currently being advertised.
That's great. Well, thank you both for being here. And that's it for a Senior Moment this time. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next month.